Here we're beginning with Masechet Shkalim. This is the one Yerushalmi Masechta that we do within the scope of the Daf Yomi. What's interesting about Yerushalmi in general is that it's not as well redacted as the Bavli. And so because of that, the Gersa changes are more significant and many more in general that we're going to see throughout the Masechta. In addition, because of that lack of redaction, a lot of the transitional words are also missing. Things that make the Bavli easier to read, which were put in over time through redaction, which are words like Vahatanya, Vitznan, which are lead words that tell you that we're about to ask a question, what we're going to bring down as the question, what's the source of the question. A lot of those words are missing within the Yerushalmi. Some of them are here. Sometimes they're put in by people who are familiar with the Bavli and added them in, sometimes properly, sometimes improperly. And so therefore, there are times within the Yerushalmi where it's hard to know whether the Gemara is asking a question or answering a question, making a statement, because they don't give you the keywords that would tell you that whether they're asking or answering a question. So it's a little more challenging in terms of reading the Gemara itself, but it's a good exposure to the Yerushalmi. We have Masechta in the Bavli that looks similar to the Yerushalmi. So things like Nazir have a similar feel, things that were less well redacted, less learned. You have Masechta like that, that have that type of feeling to them. Alright, so now Shkolim itself deals with the fiscal year of the Beit HaMikdash. The fiscal year of the Beit HaMikdash began in Nisan, Aleph Nisan, to Aleph Nisan. So that's when the new fiscal year began at every Aleph Nisan. And in terms of the fiscal year, it's not only taking care of the Mikdash itself, as well as the public works around Yerushalayim and around Eretz Yisrael, but also was providing the monies to support the public karbonot, the karbonot tzibur within the Mikdash. That's actually the most fundamental part of the fiscal year, is ensuring that every Jew is a participant in the karbonot tzibur. We do that by collecting the machatzita shekel, the half shekel that's commanded in the Midbar in Parshat Kitisa. There, we're going to see in the Gemara today as well that there are numerous items that are mentioned there, one of which is a half shekel that's going towards the Mikdash. Part of it building the Mikdash and part of it for supplying the capital to pay for the karbonot that are there. And the reason that it's a half shekel is to make sure, ensure that everybody has equal ownership within the karbonot tzibur. And therefore, it doesn't matter how wealthy or how poor you are, everybody gave the same number. As terms of the machatzit shekel, machatzit shekel in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu is actually not the only coin you can bring, it's the minimum standard. As long as you have that minimum value, then you can give that as your machatzit shekel. What they can do is increase it above that. If they need more funds, they can increase it so that the quote-unquote half shekel that you give is larger than the half shekel of Moshe Rabbeinu. And again, it doesn't have to be a half shekel. It just has to be a value that is that or greater than that of the machatzit shekel that was given in the time of Moshe, time of Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar. The Rishonim have discussions about the value, measurement, size of those coins. The Ramban ala Torah disagrees with Rashi as to the size of the coin. The Machatzit HaShekel, Rashi gives a size that he thinks it is and what he thinks the Machatzit HaShekel is. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban, later in his life, when he visits Eretz Yisrael, writes a letter back saying that Rashi is right. I found the Machatzit HaShekel here in Eretz Yisrael, and Rashi's measurements or weights are correct, and that is the true size of the Machatzit HaShekel. We have a number of those letters from the Ramban that speak to his commentary on Chumash. This is one of the places where he says that I changed my mind and Rashi is correct over here. Now we begin. Bechad be'adar, mashmiim ala shkalim. On the first of Adar, we, Gemara will ask what mashmiim means, but machrizim, we announce that it's time to bring the shkalim to the Mikdash. The reason is that we have to give a month's notice to give the people the time to get their funds together and then get it to the Mikdash. Even according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who generally says that when it comes to holidays, we only wait 2 weeks in advance to prepare for the holidays. The Rambanan said we do a chodesh, we do 4 weeks in advance, we prepare for a holiday. Even Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says 2 weeks, here agrees that it's a month ahead of time because of the money changers. The money changers set up shop within the Medina, outside, all around Eretz Yisrael, on the 15th of the month, to allow people to bring in their half a shekel, to change it, to get the money they needed, and to give it in to the Mikdash, and then they move to Yerushalayim later in the month. So in order to give people enough time to work with these shulchanim, work with the money changers, they had to give them enough notice. And that's why everybody believes to give notice on the first of Adar. V'ala kila'ayim. The other thing that you announce on that day is the kila'ayim. The kila'ayim is because after the winter time, that you see the fields and you go to check what's grown in the fields. Sometimes things that you didn't plan grew. Sometimes things that you did plan have grown further or bigger than you thought. And therefore you want to clear out the fields from any kilayim that is grown during the winter period. Kilayim can happen either because you planted it as kilayim, or kilayim can happen is because you're a mekayim kilayim. If kilayim develops in the field and you leave it in the field, your kiyum, or allowing it to continue, is the equivalent of planting kilayim, and you're held responsible for that, and it can ruin your crops. It can make them asur ba'ana'ah. It can ruin them, whether it's kilei zra'im or kilei ha'kerim. In terms of these announcements on the first of Adar, as far as kilayim, we understand because of the seasonal issue with it. In terms of the first of Adar for the shkalim, we mentioned one thing was the fiscal year of the Mikdash begins on Aleph Nisan. So because of that, they wanted to give them a month's notice beforehand. The other thing both the Bavli and the Yerushalmi bring down is that Hashem saw in the future that Haman was going to be shokel shkalim neged klal Yisrael on Purim, and therefore Hashem wanted his children to be makdim, the shkalim, to the shkalim of Haman. And so therefore he had them bring him on the first of Adar versus the 14th of Adar. Yerushalmi and the Bavli disagree as to what is connected to what, because on Aleph Adar we announce about the shkalim, but we also in the Gemara Megillah learn that we read Parshat Shkalim. So between the Bavli and Yerushalmi have slightly different versions of the Gemara as to whether the reading of the Parsha or the announcements, what is correlated with what? What is correlated with the Mikdash and being a month in advance versus what's correlated with Hashem's plan to have the Shkalim be given prior to Shiklei Haman. On the 15th of the month, you read the Megillah in the walled cities. The reason that they mention this is not because they're talking about Purim or speaking about Purim, it's because they're going to discuss everything that happens on the 15th of the month of Adar. So if it was enumerating everything that happens in the month of Adar, it would also mention the 14th, which is the more important Purim. But the fact is that it's only about here to discuss what's going on the 15th of the month. It happens to be that they also read the Megillah on the 15th of the month in the walled cities from the time of Yoshua ben Nun. So that's why it's mentioned here. It's mentioned here, agav, just as a sidebar, a side note, not as a major theme of this Mishnah. That's why they start from the 15th of the month, Korin to Megillah b'Kvachim. U mitaknim et adrachim ve'et arechovot. They clear up, or they fix up the major roads, thoroughfares, and areas of transportation for people. Now this happens because during the winter season it rains, and everything becomes muddy or ruined when there are places that have snow. And so they have to fix them up. The reason they have to fix them up is a machloket, whether they have to fix them up because of the Ole Regalim. They're coming into Pesach when there's going to be a major movement of people towards Yerushalayim, so they fix it up. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that there's a chiyuvin in the Torah with regards to the Arei Miklat, tanchin lecha derech. You have to ensure that the paths and the ways to the Arei Miklat are easily used, passable, and signed, so that the person who has to run to the Ir Miklat doesn't have any issue about getting to the Ir Miklat. So that's the other possibility of why they would have to fix these things up. Ve'et ha-mikvot ha-mayim, you have to fix up the mikvat ha-mayim, because either during the winter time they were ruined, in the winter time they got mud in them, things came, so you have to dredge them out, you have to clear them out, that's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that you're switching from the winter time to the summertime when during the winter time, you might have sufficient zochalim, which is running water, flowing water, which you can use as a mikveh. If it's coming out of a mayan, it's coming out of a spring, and you have enough flow of water, that you can use as a mikveh. But when you come into the summertime, either the mayanot dry up, which is a possibility, or they come down, or they're not going to be enough of that water. And in order to have a mikveh is standing water, can't be flowing water. So they had to be mitakein, the mikvahot, so that the standing water now was in place, so that they could use the mikvot of standing water rather than the flowing water, or to replace the mayanot that are going to dry up. They need a mikvot there. So they have to clean them up and make sure that they were ready for the summer period. Vosim kol tzachei rabim. They do all the needs of the rabim here, which is left undefined of what the tzorchei rabim is, and we'll get to that in the Gemara, is what the definition of the tzorchei rabim is. Umitzayanim et akvarot. This is mentioned in other places in the Bavli as well, which is that they sign the graves or the areas of Tumah in order to make it clear where there is Tumah so that people don't come to Tumat HaOel when they go over a mate. Make sure that the graves are clearly demarcated or marked. They do this by pouring tzid, lime, very white lime over those areas to delineate those areas. So it's clear, easily seen. And during the winter time when it rains, it washes it away or makes it darker so you can't see it as well. So you have to freshen those up and make sure those are repainted, as we would say. They redo the lines so that everybody knows where the kvarot are, and so they do not get into trouble with the terms of Tumat Ohel over a mate. Yotzim af al kilayim. And now, as opposed to the first case where we announced about the kilayim on the first Adar, here on the 15th of Adar, they go out to check. Beit Din has shluchim that go out to make sure that people are complying with the rules of kilayim and making sure that there is no kilayim in the fields. Now the Gemara. The Lama ve'echad ve'adar. Why do we announce about the shkalim on the first of Adar? So my answer is, k'day, she'aviu et Yisrael shiklehem ba'onotam v'titrama trumat alishka min ha'chadasha bizmana ve'echad b'nisan. Very straightforward answer. They want to make sure that the new fiscal year begins on time. The new fiscal year begins on the first of Nisan. It's called the trumat alishka. The lishka is the treasury of the Mikdash. Trumat alishka, we'll see when we get to the subsequent prakim here, there's a whole procedure for how they take the monies to use for the karbanot. The monies that they had there exceeded the value of the karbanot that they needed. So they took up what's called trumat alishka. They took up a portion of the coins from there to utilize for the tzibur. And then we're going to see there's going to be what's called leftovers of the lishka. And the leftover, there are certain things that monies that get left over, they're utilized for different public works or necessities within the city. So over here, we're talking about that Shumat HaLishka is the beginning process of taking off the money to use for the new fiscal year within the Mikdash. So in order to ensure that happens on time, they start the announcements a month in advance in order that it works that way. Here it says Umar. Umar is equivalent of Amar in the Yushami. In general, the Yushami drops the Aleph. When things begin with an Aleph, they drop the Aleph out. So you'll see many times within Yushami. So here it says Mar Rebbe really means Amar Rebbe. Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Shmuel bar Yitzchak says, now, Trumat HaLishka is probably a problematic gear, so it should not be there. But rather, here we have in our Gemara, Kitchilata, probably should read Kitchila, like in the beginning. I mean, like in the first place. That's how we know that this is the case. Now, Dichtiv is not used in the Yerushalmi. That's a Bavli word that was added in later. So the word Dichtiv probably doesn't belong here. Vahi, Chodesh HaRishon, Bashana Shinit, Ve'echad HaChodesh Ukama Mishkan. On the first day of the first month, in the second year, that Bnei Yisrael are in the Midbar, they put the Mishkan into service. If they put the Mishkan into service on that day, then the fiscal year begins on that day when they put it into service. So he says, similar to the beginning of the Mishkan, so to every year, that is the beginning of the fiscal year. That's the source that he has for the fact that we have a fiscal year that begins on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So here the Yerushalmi doesn't point out what it's looking for. It just jumps or flows into it, which is the first statement was, we have to announce on the first of Adar because the first of Nisan is the beginning of the fiscal year. Yerushalmi now is searching for the source that the fiscal year begins on the first of Nisan. Where do we know that from? The first of Nisan is the beginning of the fiscal year. Again, the word, the psukim and the Yerushalmi are introduced usually without any introduction. That's why the dichtiv is probably unlikely to be a word from the Yerushalmi. V'tani Allah, and we have a braita on this pasuk, which is, Beyom Shukama Mishkan, Bo Bayom Nitruma Truma. That was the big day they began the fiscal year. So they have a braita that supports that understanding of the pasuk, which is, that on the first day that it went into service, that was also the day they put into the Truma, or the Trumat HaLishka goes into service. They have a first attempt at it, which is a Pasuk that's brought that says that Mishkan went into service on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so too, subsequent to that, that was the beginning of the fiscal year. Then we have an alternative answer. Rabbi Tabi, now again here, the Yerushalmi, when it makes statements like this, where it has a sequence of Amoraim that are speaking, instead of saying what we have in the Bible, which is Amar Rabbi, Amar this, Amar that, so that you know that saying this one, saying the name of the next one, here they have just the names of the Amoraim. So you have Rabbi Tabi, Rabbi Oshaya, B'Shem, and probably should be Rav Kahana here. So here you have two Eretz Yisrael Amoraim, right, a third generation Amora, Rabbi Tabi, and a second generation Rabbi Yoshaya. Quoting from a second generation Amora in Bavel, and generally the quotes that we're going to have here, that the crossover between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael is usually in the second generation Amoraim. You don't generally have a quote that comes directly from a first generation Amora in Bavel to Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael, so you'll generally have an Amora from Eretz Yisrael, second generation, and over there you'll have a crossover between the two. So now, Rabbi Tavi, Rabbi Yeshaya, B'Shem Rav Kahana, Nemergan Chodshei, V'Nemer Lahalan Chodshei. So here we have a Pasuk of Chodshei, and there we have a Pasuk of Chodshei. Now here the Gemara doesn't give you what the Psukim are, but the references are to the Psukim that are found, number one, in the Musafim, in Parshat Pinchas, for the Karban Musaf of Rosh Chodesh. And over there it says, Zot Olat Chodesh B'Chodesho L'Chodeshei Hashana. And the other reference is to the Chodeshei that is found in Parshat Bo, when Hashem gives Moshe the mitzvah of setting up the calendar and being Koveya Rosh Chodesh. And there it says, Achodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodeshei Hashana. So we have both Chodeshei that's mentioned by the Korban Musaf, and Chodeshei that is mentioned by Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So now he connects the two. Ma Chodeshei Shenema Lahalan in Monim Elam Nisan, the Chodeshei that's mentioned by HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, that's referencing Nisan. Av Chodeshei Shenema Kan, also the Chodeshei that's mentioned over here by the Karban Musaf of Rosh Chodesh, in Monim Elam Nisan, you start from Nisan. So now the limud is that just like the Chodeshim that we talk about the beginning of the calendar year, that started from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is the beginning of the calendar, so that Nisan is Koveya to be the first, so too, by the Korban Musaf, the Chodeshei, the Chodesh, is the first of the month. Now, there is a lot of information that's missing, in a sense, because how do you know that's talking about Trumat Alishka? How do you know it's talking about the fiscal year of the Mikdash? And that's noted right away by the Amoraim here, which is Amar Rabbi Yonah. So Rabbi Yonah, who's a fourth generation Amora, says, Shavak Rabbi Tabi Rosha, V'amar sofa, the word dematnita probably doesn't belong in the gear here. Rabbi Tabi brought down the end of the Braita, but left out the beginning of the Braita. The beginning of the Braita is what gives you the information, that gives you the background as to why his limud has anything to do with the fiscal year in the Mikdash. And dilachain, so that's the equivalent of dimlokain, then how do we would understand the context in which he's speaking? To the Hadatani, it's similar, it should be similar to a Braita like this, which is, Zot Olat Chodesh B'Chodesho. Yochol Tehei Toreim B'Chol Chodesh B'Chodesh. You would think that you'd have to take off money each month to pay for the Karbanot. Tamalomar B'Chodesho L'Chodeshei Hashana. So B'Chodesho in the month for all the months of the year. B'Chodesh Echad Hu Toreim L'Chol Chodeshei Hashana. So all the monies are allocated for the Karbanot Tzibur in 1 month for all the months of the year. Yochol Beze Chodesh Yirtzeh. You would think that he could pick whichever month he pleases. He can make that the month in which he makes the collections or the distributions for the Karbanot Tzibur. So the Gemara says, no, Nemar Kan Chodeshei, Nemar Lalman Chodeshei. My Chodeshei Shenemar Lalan Ein Monim Ela Minisan, Av Chodeshei Shenemar Kan Ein Monim Ela Nisan. So now they bring the tail end of the Braita, which is the lima that was quoted by Rabbi Tabi, and Rabbi Yonah says, now I understand the context, but now we're already speaking about Trumat Alishka, talking about the fiscal year of the Mikdash. So in that context, the completion of the Braita is the comparison between the Chodeshei of the Karban Musaf and the Chodeshei of Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and that's what the answer is. How do you know which month to start from in terms of 1 month representing the whole year? That is Nisan. From there we learn out that the fiscal year in the Mikdash begins at Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So at this point we have two sources for the fact that it begins at Nisan. One is the limud out of the Karban Musaf from Parsha Pinchas, which tells us, first of all, 1 month is the month that you collect for Kol Chodeshei Hashana. That month, how do we know what it is? That's Gzeir Shava to the Chodeshei that's found by Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That's one limud. The other limud was that when it came to the consecration of the Mishkan, it took place on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and we have a Braita that says that on the day of the consecration, that's when they began the fiscal year of the Mikdash. So those are the two possibilities as to why Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the beginning of the fiscal year of the Mikdash. As far as Rosh Chodesh Adar being the time that we announce it, that's Mitzvara. That's a logical argument. We had the other Midrash about the Shkalim of Haman versus the Shkalim of Bnei Yisrael, but in general, we're going to see in the Gemara here, that's not from a limud from the Pesukim. The only limud we have is about when the beginning of the fiscal year is. Now the Gemara continues and says, Mahu Mashmi'in. The Mishnah says, Be'echad Ba'adar Mashmi'im Al Hashkalim. The Gemara wants to know, what does this word Mashmi'im mean? So Rav Huna Amar Machrizin. Rav Huna says it means Machrizin, that we announce. We make public announcements, we disseminate the information. Heich Ma De Atamar. From where do you have a source for that, or where are you learning this from? So now the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Divrei Yamim, speaking about Yoash Melech Yehuda, and there it says, "Vayitnu kol b'Yehuda u'b'Yerushalayim la'avi l'Hashem masat Moshe eved Elokim al Yisrael b'midbar." So masat Moshe is from Kitisa. The masat Moshe means the chatzi shekel that was done in the midbar based on Moshe Rabbeinu. It says, "Vayitnu kol b'Yehuda u'b'Yerushalayim," that they made a public cry for people to bring in the chatzi shekel to the chazek of the bayit, to strengthen the bayit for the karbanot, and so on and so forth. So that's how he learns it. Now, if you look in the Bach says that he thinks that this is not the proper girsa over here,
Because the problem with the pasuk that they quoted, it never has the word mashmiya in it. It doesn't have the word mashmiya. So yes, from a topical standpoint, we see that yes, with regards to the chatziya shekel, we make such an announcement, but it doesn't connect that to the word mashmiya that's in the Mishnah. So he suggests that the pasuk should read, or what it should read over here is, Vasher yashmiu vayaviru ko b'chol areihem ubi Yerushalayim leimor tzuhahar veviu alei zayit vaalei et shemen vaalei hadas vaalei tmarim vaalei tzavot lasot sukot kakatuv. Just found in Nechamia, Perek Chet. Over there we have the word vayashmiu that's used next to vayaviru kol. So over there the definition of yashmiu is to be mavir kol, to make an announcement, make a public cry, that they should bring in the donations to support the mikdash. So that would be the proof text. The Rosh, on the other hand, says that he thinks the original is fine, because they're not after the word shmua in particular, they're just after the idea that there is such a concept of a hachraza, an announcement. And over there, the pasuk from Divrei Hayamim is clearer that we're speaking about chatziya shekel, because it mentions Masat Moshe, mentions the chatziya shekel that Moshe collected in the Midbar. So one of those two psukim is the proof text of the fact that we do make such a public announcement coming into it. Now, Taman Taninan. We have a Mishnah over there. Over there is in Masechet Megillah. We have such a Mishnah, which is En Ben Adar Rishon, Adar Sheni. There's no difference between the first Adar and the second Adar. Ela Mikra Megillah, Matanot Le'Avyonim. Except for the fact that you can only perform Mikra Megillah and Matanot Le'Avyonim in the second Adar, not in the first Adar. We'll leave that for when we get to the Gemara Megillah, exactly what's left out of this Mishnah, what should have been included in this Mishnah. We have now a statement on this point, which is Rabbi Simon. Now Rabbi Simon in the Yerushalmi is the equivalent of Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. That was his name, was Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. Here they call him in the Yerushalmi, they call him Rabbi Simon. B'shem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So it's a second generation Amora speaking to in the name of a first generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael, which is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Af. What should also be a difference here is Shimua Shkalim Vikilayim Binehem. The announcements about collecting of the Shkalim and the announcements about the Kilayim are also made in Adar Sheni, Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni, and not in Rosh Chodesh Adar Rishon. That should have been included there as well. Now we have a statement here in the Gemara, which probably does not belong. It's probably lifted out of the other Gemara, because in some places it's contextually makes sense, but it does not belong here at all. So the Gra takes it out completely. I'll just read it, and then we can explain what might have been the alternative over here. So it's Rabbi Chalbo, Rav Huna, Rav, B'shem Rav Chia Rabo. Rabbi Chalbo is a third generation Amora in Yisrael, speaking to, in the name of Rav Huna, is a second generation Amora in Bavel, from Rav. Rav, who's a Ki Amora, the first generation Amora in Bavel, B'shem Rabbi Chia Rabo. Rabbi Chia Rabo is his uncle, who is his Rebbe, who's also a Talmud Chover of Rabbi himself. So his name of Rabbi Chia, who lives in that transitional generation between the Amoraim and the Tanaim. So that's the quote is in this way, which is Ago Yotzim Biyudalet Shuzman Kriyata. Everybody's Yotze Mikra Megillah on the 14th because that's the time of its reading. And we're going to see this later in today's daf, so I'll explain it. Over here it makes no sense. It has no relevance to the Gemara that we're speaking about here. What likely might have been is that the alternative girsa here is a Yotzim Shuzman Zriyala Kol or something like that, which is that over here, if you note, in our Mishnah, there are two things that are spoken about with regards to Kilayim. One is the announcement on Rosh Chodesh Adar. The second one is on the 15th of Adar, the messengers, the Shluchai Beitim, go out to go check and see if people already had removed their Kilayim. What's addressed here by Rabbi Simon was only the fact that Mashmi'in, we make the announcement about the Kilayim. What about the fact that Yotzin, that you actually go out on Kilayim in the second month? So that would make sense that if you're making the announcement on Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni, that you'd also go out on the 15th of Adar Sheni. So that should also be included. And that might be what this statement is about, is that they're Yotzim. They go out in the second month because that is Man Zriya. That's the time of planting, and therefore it makes the most sense to go out then for the Shluchei Beitin to go out. So if that's the case, then you have an additional statement about Kilayim. Otherwise, this doesn't belong here at all. Now, Amar Rabbi Yosei, in the Yushalmi, instead of a Yud at the end of the name, you have a Hey at the end of the name. So Rabbi Yosei with a Yud at the end in the Bavel is Rabbi Yosei with a Hey at the end in the Yushalmi. Veyot. That makes a lot of sense. That's absolutely correct. Blum amru mashmim ala shkalim. La, lam here means ella, kedei shiavyu Yisrael et shikleim bonotam. So the only reason that you make the announcement 30 days before is so that they bring their shkalim on time. Number one is that we want to give them enough time to get their money together and to be prepared to pay for it. But we don't want to give them too much time, because if we give them too much time, they'll procrastinate, they'll forget about it, and they won't do it. So 30 days is determined to be the right amount of time for the announcement and have people actually execute on that announcement. So if that's the whole purpose, im at amar, so the gears here probably should be flipped to omer at, because we're going to see in a second the Gemara has a similar statement and uses omer at. So you have one or two choices. You can change the gears here to match the gears there, or change the gears there to match the gears here. The Bach does the opposite. Some of the others say that the gears should be changed here, and says im omer at, if you say badar rishon, then he makes the announcement on Rosh Chodesh adar rishon, ar gedon it b'shato shitin yomin. It means for the remainder of the year, there's 60 days left. Till Nisan from Rosh Chodesh Adar Rishon, 60 days. And that's too much time. People will not remember that. They will not execute on that. And a second statement, which is, Kulum Amru Yotzim Af Al Kilayim. Why do they say you go out on the Kilayim? So over here it uses Yotzim Al Kilayim rather than the Mashmi Al Kilayim. La, which means Elo Kedei Shivat Smachim Nikarim. So that the growth is already recognizable. It's grown enough so that you can actually figure out what's there and whether it's Kilayim or not. We just reached the end of the rainy season. Items are starting to emerge to come out of the ground. So we wanted them to be significant enough so we can make a determination as to whether it's Kilayim or not. Im Omer Ad Adar Rishon, if you say going out on Adar Rishon, either to 15th, the Shluchim going out, or on the Rosh Chodesh, the Ming Mashmia, Ad Kedoni Nun Dikikin. They're too small, they're too thin, they're too tiny for you to make any determination with regards to Kilayim. So this is the logical argument for why the announcements for Shkalim are in Rosh Chodesh Adar, because it makes sense that that period of time, that window of time, gives the person the right amount of time to actually hear it and then deal with the issue of Chatzi Shekel. And based on that, we would move that to Adar Sheni and not to Adar Rishon, maintaining that same logic with regards to getting the Shkalim in on time, and the same would show with Kilayim. Where you are seasonally would make a difference. And that's because, if you remember, the reason that they would make it into a leap year is because we want Nisan to match up with the seasonal Tkufa, Tkufat Aviv. So Chazal would be Ma'aber the Shana. They would make it into a leap year in order to push back Pesach and to push the calendar back so that it matches up with the spring season. So if they're already making it into a leap year, that's because the growth or the result of the rains has yet to take effect. They're too early in the season. So it only makes sense to go out on Kilayim in the second month than in the first month, because that's exactly why they made it into a leap year. So then along comes Rabbi Chizkiah and Shaul, and he asks, Me'ata, based on what you just said, this logic, then B'nai Bavel, Mashmim ala Shkalim Mirosho Shel, what the Girsa that was in the Gemara was Chodesh, makes no sense, and it should be Choref, from the beginning of the winter. If you're saying that the whole point of these announcements is to get the Shkalim there on time so that everybody can have their Shkalim in by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that works well in Eretz Yisrael if you're talking about 30 days before. But you're talking about the people in Bavel, for them to get their Shkalim in on time, they would really need much more time. And that's what he's saying here, that they should have to make their announcement much earlier at the beginning of the winter. Today, Sheviu Yisrael Shkalim Bonotam, Vititrim Shumad Lishkam Min HaChadasha B'Zmana Bechad B'Nisan. So that Bnei Yisrael will get their Shkalim in on time so that we can begin the new fiscal year at Rosh Chodesh Nisan with everybody's Shkalim in there. So that would mean that in Bnei Bavel we would have to announce much earlier. So Heitiv Rabbi Ula Kume Rabbi Mano. Rabbi Ula asked a question before Rabbi Mano. Bahataninan. This is a Mishnah further on in Shkalim, which is Shlosha Prakim Bashana Tomim Et Alishka. Three times a year they used to be mafrish a portion of the lishka. Not going to get so deeply into this. We'll get there when we get to the Mishnayot. But there was a whole procedure for how, once the Shkalim reached Yerushalayim, how did they separate them out to allocate the capital that they needed to purchase the Karbanot? They didn't need all the money for that. Those monies were used for other things as well, including Bedek Abayit and all the things that are mentioned in our Mishnah. So in the Mikdash, they had a process by which they did what's called Tormim et Alishka. They took off a smaller basket from the larger baskets of money in order to allocate that money towards the buying of the Karbanot. And they did that three times a year. Beprosa Pesach. At Prosa Pesach. Pros means before. It also means half. And so the Bavli determines that it means half of the normal period in which you learn before a holiday. That's a month before the holiday you learn. So half of that would be half a month, or about 2 weeks. Roughly. So therefore, if you know about Pesach, 2 weeks before is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or half a month before is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, they used to take off the first time from the Lishka. Then, Beprusa Atzeret, also prior to Shavuot, Beprusa Chag, and prior to Sukkot. Amar Le, which is probably unnecessary here, Neymar, why don't you say, Elaine Dekrivin, Beprosa Pesach. The reason they had these three times is because for the people close by, they used to separate out of the Truma before Pesach, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Elaine Derechokim, those that were further away, Beprosa Atzeret, they would do that a little before Shavuot. V'ilein d'rochokim minhon, the people that are the furthest away, they would separate out for them before Sechag, before Sukkot. So what his suggestion is that here, the reason that you have three different times during the year is because the Shkalim actually took a longer time to get there from the further places. That means that they actually all got the announcement at the same time. And since they got the announcement at the same time, it took longer for those people further away to actually get their shkalim in. And that's against this conclusion that Rabbi Chizkiah made, which was that must be in Bavel, they had to announce earlier, so everybody gets their shekel in at the same time. This also relates to a separate issue, which we're going to see later on in the Gemara, as to whether, when they took off the Trumat HaLishka, they had in mind for the shkalim that were collected already, as well as those that were coming in the future. We paskin that you do have to have in mind not only the shkalim that came, but those in the future as well, so that everybody has a participation in the Karbanot. Clear here that these Amoraim believe that that's not the case, that you are mafrish only on what's there, and not what's going to come in the future. And so based on that, he says, look, I have these three time periods during the year in which I mafrish the Trumat HaLishka. That must correspond to the three times a year where the shkalim got there based on the distance people were away from Eretz Yisrael. So now we have Amar Lei. Rabbi Mano responds to Rabbi Ula and says, Kula ke'achat haita ba'ah, that it all comes at one time. Everybody brings in their shkolim by Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Ah, v'lam amru b'shlosha perakim. So then why does the Mishnah say that there were three different times in the year where they were mafrish the Trumat HaLishka from the Lishka itself? Kedei lasot, what we have here is pumbi la davar. We make it pumbi for the davar. Probably the proper term is pumpi, from the word pumpi in Latin and in Greek, which means the hader ulifa'er, means to glorify, to honor, to give significance to the event. The way the Bavli translates it, sometimes pumbi means something in public, to publicize the issue. There are times where it's used in the Midrash, and certain times in Shas, where saying that it's public doesn't make so much sense, because we're talking about things that are transpiring inside of the Heichal. It says the Heichal, there's not a public eye, people can't even see what's going on there. So it's more to give a sense of pe'er and a sense of hadar to these mitzvot. And it probably comes from the word pompi, which is pomp. Like pomp and circumstance is probably the source of this word and was changed within the Gemara from pompi to pumbi. But either way, it means either to make a big deal of it. People were coming up for the regel. So before each regel, they used to make an excitement about this type of Trumat HaLishka, so people would know about it, they'd hear about it. It was something that would give significance to this mitzvah, as well as the fact that it would catch different people because you're dealing with three different regalim. That answer of Rabbi Manoah solved the problem, says they all came at once, and that maybe Rabbi Chizkiah is right, that they actually made the announcements earlier in the further places so they could actually get their money in on time. The only difficulty is that there's Mishnayot further in the parak that specifically say that it has to do with the distance that people came. And therefore, it presents a little bit of a difficulty for Rabbi Mana's explanation, because the Mishnah later on in Parak Gimel says, Taram et harishona l'shem Eretz Yisrael, ashniya l'shem krachim ukofim la, and then the shlishit, l'shem Bavel, l'shem Madai, l'shem Midinot HaRechokot. So clearly the Mishnah over there says that it has to do with the distance people are from Yerushalayim. So that would be much harder to explain according to Rabbi Mana. According to Rabbi Ula, it makes a lot of sense. That's exactly why how he is explaining the Mishnah in that way. Rabbi Mana obviously is explaining it otherwise, and would have to come up with a way to deal with that latter Mishnah that says it was divided up based on the distance people were from Eretz Yisrael. Right now we move on to a new sugya, which is, it's Rabbi Yehuda Bar Pazi, or Rabbi Yehuda Bar Simon, B'shem Rabbi. Now, it's very difficult because Rabbi Yehuda Bar Pazi lives a third or fourth generation Amora, and B'shem Rabbi, for him to say that in something in the name of Rabbi, who's a last generation Tano, it doesn't make sense that he'd be quoting directly from Rabbi. So most people change the gears to read Rabbi Yochanan over here. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is an interesting character. I've mentioned this in the past in terms of the Yushami. Rabbi Yochanan lives a very long life. And because he lives a long life, he causes a lot of problems. When you go to the Bavli, and you want to determine the generations of Amoraim, you look at who spoke to whom, who were peers with whom. So we know that Abai and Rava were together. We know that Rabba was their Rebbe, or a generation before them. And Rapapa was a generation after Rava. So we have that based on the Rebbe-Talmud relationships, as well as the peers in whom they argued with within the context of the Gemara. So based on that, we can determine first generation, second generation, third generation. The problem in the Yerushalmi is because Rabbi Yochanan and Eretz Yisrael lives such a long life, he ends up talking to everybody in the Yerushalmi. Since he talks to everybody in the Yerushalmi, it's very hard to know when anybody lived, because they're all talking to Rabbi Yochanan. But Rabbi Yochanan lives over four generations of the Yerushalmi. But Rabbi Yochanan is, number one, a prominent figure in the Yerushalmi. And number two is, it's likely that he could have been called Rabbi, because he had that stature within Eretz Yisrael. And that's what it says over here, possibly, is that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Pazi b'shem Rabbi Yochanan, who they called Rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. That would make more sense. Hey Nikra, velo Nivhat. It should be changed to a Hey there, not an Ayin. How can we read these Pesukim and not be embarrassed? Litova. So here the Yerushalmi doesn't give you a lot of explanation, but it just says things and we'll work out what it means. It is Litova. When it comes to good, it says Kol Nidiv Lev. L'ra'ah, it says Vayitbarku Kol Ha'am. So here is a contrast in the donations that were brought. When it comes to the donations of the Mishkan, it says, Vayavo hanashim al anashim, kol nediv leiv, hevi uchach vanezim v'tabad v'chumaz gogli zahav v'chol ish asher hinif tunufa zahav la'ashem. So when it comes to the donations of the Mishkan, it says, kol nediv leiv, those that were generous gave. Yeah, when it comes to the Maisa Egel, it says, Vayitparku kol ha'am et nizmei hazahav asher bozneim v'yavu el aron, that the entire nation brought donations to the Egel. So that's the point. He says, how can we not read these psukim and not be embarrassed by the fact that when it came to the donations to the Mishkan, only the generous people gave. When it came to donations to the Egel, everybody gave. Nobody held back. That's an indictment of the Dor HaMidbar. Another example of this, Litova. For the good, it says, Vayotze Moshe Ta'am. When it comes to Mamad Har Sinai, it says there, Vayotze Moshe Ta'am Likrat Elukim. Moshe has to actually push the people out. That's the Midrash, the famous Chazal. On Vayotze Moshe, Moshe has to drag the people to Mamad Har Sinai. Yet, on the other hand, Lira'ah, when it comes to something negative, when it came to sending the Meraglim, everybody showed up. Nobody needed to be pushed to come there. They came of their own volition. As it says in Sefer Dvarim, Vatigruun Eilai Kulchem Vatomru. Nishlecha nashim lefaneinu v'yachpru lanu et aretz v'yeshuvu otanu davar et aderech hashenei laba v'tarim hashen avo elehen. So here the people are asking for the meraglim, and they come out of their own volition, and everybody comes, not just Moshe Rabbeinu pushing them to do something. And then the last example is litova, it's az yashir Moshe v'nei Yisrael l'ra'av v'tisa kol aida. So here it's not so clear what the contrast is. It says az yashir Moshe u'v'nei Yisrael. One way to read it is it's Bnei Yisrael means not all of Bnei Yisrael, not whole Beit Yisrael, but only Bnei Yisrael, only a portion of Bnei Yisrael. That's one way to read it on the good side. Or on the good side, the other option is to say, it's Az Yashir Moshe uVnei Yisrael. It was Moshe's impetus, and Moshe drove the song there by the Shirat Hayam. On the other hand, Lira'ah, when it comes to the crying, when they get the news report from the Meraglim, over there it says, Vatisa Kol Haida. Then first of all, the whole nation started to cry. And then they raised their voices. So again, it's the opposite in both ways. Number one is it's kol ha'am, and not just a portion of the am, if you say that's this limud over here. Or Moshe doesn't need to prompt them to all of a sudden come and cry and to complain, whereby Az Yashir, he has to prompt them and push them to sing the song Aliyam. So here you have these contrasts, three contrasts in the Dor HaMidbar, between good things and bad things. In each case, when it came to the bad, they didn't require any pushing, they didn't require any instigation, and they did it on their own. When it comes to the good, either they need someone to push them, or they're more reluctant, only a portion of them participate in it. So, again, these are three indictments of the Dor HaMidbar. We read this psukim, we must be embarrassed by that contrast. So then we have something that is similar along these lines, which is Amar Rabbi Chiya, Barba. The Aleph again is dropped in Yushami. It means Barabo, but it should be Barba. Achein ishkimo ve'ishchitu. This is a pasuk from Tzvanya, which is Achein ishkimo ishchitu kol alilotam. Talking about the people of Yerushalayim, that they used to get up early to do all their bad deeds. They didn't have need anybody to wake them up. They were up bright and early to do everything bad. Kol hashchata. Anytime there's something bad or negative that's going to transpire, sheyosim, that they wanted to do. Bashkama yosimota. They used to do it early in the morning. They used to do it first thing. And that's the same thing by the eagle. That's what the reference is to over here. The Mishnah doesn't connect them, but it's clear that they're referencing the eagle that was mentioned in the previous limud, which is by the eagle. It says vayeshkimu macharat vayelu olot vaygishu shlamim. They got up the next morning and they brought the karbanot to the eagle after they had built it the previous day. So there we have hashkama. Early in the morning they got up to worship the eagle, and so too when it came to the Anshei Yerushalayim, they used to get up early to sin, and they did not delay or tarry at all. So that's another indictment both of the Dor HaMidbar as well as Yerushalayim before it is destroyed. So that's because of hashkata sheyosim hashkama you osim ota. Again, a negative thing that they had such alacrity when it came to doing bad, and when it came to doing the mitzvot, they didn't show that same sense of alacrity. So now we have another, Amar Rabbi, it shouldn't be Abba in the Rishami, it should read Ba, Amar Rabbi Ba, Bar Acha, Ein At Yachol Lamod Ofiya Shel Umazu. You cannot come to a decision or a definition of the character of this nation. Nitbayim Le'ego, Vinotim. They were asked to give for the ego. Sure enough, they donate. Nidvayim the Mishkan, they're asked to donate to Mishkan, Vinotnim, and they also give. Hard to determine. They're willing to give money both to the Egel, and they're willing to give money to the Mishkan as well. We'll see in a second, the Gemara is going to say something along these lines, which is, that's what makes Chazal say that the Mishkan is a kapara for the Egel, because they're so similar in nature, and you see B'nai Shal's action in both of these cases, as well as the fact that both of them really are solving the same problem, which is that B'nai Yisrael are looking for some sort of physical manifestation of their worship and their Avodat Hashem. So they did it once wrong with regards to the ego, and they did it once right at the Tzivoy Hashem, they did it in the Mishkan. But both of them are trying to solve a similar problem, which is this need or necessity for a physical manifestation of God, or something that represents the ability to worship God here down on earth. Now we have Tana Ribach. Ribach over here is Rabbi Yosei ben Hanina. Hadam Matnita. We have a braita that says, Vasita kaporet zahav tohor. This is the cover for the Aron. You make it out of zahav tohor. Yavo zahav shel kaporet. V'yichaper al zahav shel egel. The gold of the kapor will be mechaper on the gold that was given to the ego. So this is a similar idea to what we just spoke about before. Then, Rabbi Chagi b'shem Rashban. So Rabbi Chagi b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman. Shalosh trumot nemru b'parsha zot. Now we have another different piece of agadat over here, which is that there are three times where truma appears in this parsha. This parsha refers to parshat truma. Because in the beginning of parshat truma, it says, Daber o b'nei Yisrael b'chulei truma. One. Made kol ish asher yidvenu libo tichu et trumati. Two. Then, zot ha truma asher tichu miyotam. Zahav achez v'nechoshet. So three times the word truma is mentioned. And now the Gemara is going to say that there are references to three different donations that were made to the Mishkan. That's Trumat Adanim. That's a donation for the sockets, the silver sockets that were the base of the Krashim. Utrumat Shkalim. And one of the Trumot was given for the Shekel, the Chatzi Shekel that supported the Karbanot HaTzibor. Utrumat HaMishkan. And the third one is a Truma that's given to the Bedek HaBayit, the building of the Mishkan itself. So you have the three Trumot that are mentioned there reference three different types of donations that were made. And now the Gemara is going to explain to you each one of them. It's going to say which Pasuk represents which one of them. Which is, Daber el B'nei Yisrael b'chulei Truma. You speak to B'nei Yisrael, they should give me a Truma. Zu Trumat Adanim. That is the Truma of the Adanim. Now the Truma of the Adanim was an equal flat tax that was placed on B'nai Yisrael, because they used that for the pikud, they used that for the counting. The chatzi shekel that was used to do the counting, that chatzi shekel was allocated to the Adanim, and later on in Parshat Pekudei, when it tells you the silver in the Adanim, it also gives you the count of B'nai Yisrael based on that, because they could count based on the number that they got. They could double that, and then know how many people there were in B'nai Yisrael. So that was a fixed donation that was made in order to make the silver of the Adanim. That is the truma of the shkalim. Now, with regards to the trumat shkalim, it's also a flat tax. It's an equal number that's placed to everybody, so everybody shares in the kavanot tzibor equally. Yet, over here it says, b'chol ish asher yidvenu libo, sounds to be like it can be any amount. So the truth is, and so we said earlier, that when it comes to the chatzi shekel, it's not a fixed amount. It has to be at the chatzi shekel or greater. So it can be any amount, as long as everybody's equal. And that's what it means. Asher teichu mehutam. That's what it means, Asher yidvenu libo, that whatever they determine to be the right amount, then everybody gets equally at that point in time. Then the last one is Zot HaTruma Asher Tichu Meitam, which is the final pasuk, talks about all the materials they brought from the Mishkan. Zot Trumat HaMishkan. That's a donation to the Mishkan, which makes sense. The building of the Mishkan was whoever had materials brought them in to use for the Mishkan. Now Trumat HaMishkan, the Mishkan. Obviously, the Truma of the Mishkan went to the Mishkan. Mashi Yirtzu Yitnu. Yirtzu here is probably Yitnu, not Yasu. Whatever they wanted to, they gave. Trumat Shkalim the Karban. The Truma of the Shkalim went to the Karbanot. The Karbanot at Tzibor, like we said before, with the Chatzi Shekel. Mashi Yirtzu Yitnu. Whatever they wanted, they could give. Kadei Shei Yad Gulan Shaveh. So that everybody's equal. So it's a flat tax. Right, so what does it mean they give whatever they want? So that's what we explained before, that the Chatzi Shekel doesn't have to be a Chatzi Shekel. It must be that amount or greater. So whatever they determine to be the amount, that they can do, but then everybody has to be equal. You have to have a flat tax at that point in time. Trumat Adanim, la Adanim. The Truma of the Adanim goes towards the Adanim. Dasher lo yarbeh, vada lo yamit. There, the wealthy can't give more, and the poor can't give less. The truth is, this probably relates to the Chatzi Shekel, and it's a misplacement of the Pasuk. It should have been brought after the Trumat Hashkalim, But it also is applicable to the Trumat HaAdanim, which is the Trumat HaAdanim was also a flat tax where you couldn't change the amount because it was used for the census. Since it's used for the census, you have to have everybody give the same coin. Now, Amar Rabbi Abun, Af Parsha Zot, Ne'amar Bagimel Truma. So too, in this Parsha, there's also mentioned three times the word Truma. Now, those three times it's mentioned is also in Parshat Ki Tisa. The first time we quoted was from Parshat Truma, there we said the word Truma appears three times. Well, so too, in Parshat Shkalim, does the word Truma appear three times? Bone is saying is that it's the same limo, it's the same three. We're talking about different types of donations, and it mentions the word Truma three times in both places to tell you that there are three different donations. Now, each one is described in a different place. The one in Parshat Ki Tisa is talking about the census, talking about the flat tax on the people. The one in Truma was talking about the broader donations towards the Mishkan, but in the beginning of the Parsha, it hints to both of them, just like we saw before in Parshat Truma. Now it says the same thing in Parshat Ki Tisa, which it says there. Ze itnu kol over ala pikudim, machatzit ha-shekel b'shekel el-kodesh, esrim gerah ha-shekel, machatzit ha-shekel Truma la-shem. That's number two. And then the third pasuk, this is pasuk Yud Gimel Yud Aleph, and Tevav is Hashir Lo Yerbeh, Vadal Lo Yamit, Machatzit Shekel, Latet Trumat Hashem Nechaper Al Nafshoteichem. There are times, three times, the word Truma is mentioned. And similar to what we just saw before, each one of the words Truma relates to a different type of donation that was brought at that time, which is Machatzit Shekel Trumat Hashem, Itain Trumat Hashem, Latet Trumat Hashem. So those the three times it's mentioned in Parshat Shkalim. Now, B'tetva Bo Korim Et HaMegillah B'Krachim. On the 15th, we read the Megillah for the walled cities. Lo Chein Omer, Lo Kach Omer. That's the way you would translate it. And now, this is the quote that we had on the previous Amud that was at a place over here, it obviously belongs, and this is where it makes sense to quote it, which is Rabbi Chelbo, in the name of Rav Huna, in the name of Rav, B'Shem Rabbi Chia Rabba. Hakol Yotzim Yudalet Shuzman Kriyata. Everybody is, you'd say, this Kriyata Megillah on the 14th, because that's the time of the Kriya. So I'm not going to get so into it now. We'll do this when we get to the Gemara Megillah, but if you want to take a peek, you should look at the Ramban, the Chidushei Ramban's introduction to Masechet Megillah. Over there, he discusses why this concept of Zman Yudalet might be Kriya L'Kol. He talks about the history of what transpired in the Megillah in order to explain some of the difficult psukim and some of the dinim that come out of the Megillah. And one of these items is that he mentions this idea of Zman Kriya L'Kol with regards to Yudalet. Now, the reason that this is difficult for our Gemara is that the Mishnah mentioned the 15th. When we say he mentioned the 15th, he's talking about all the items that took place on the 15th. So Mikra Megillah was brought in as a sidebar because it's talking about all the other items. So we mentioned the thing on the 15th altar, which is to read the Megillah in the walled cities. The problem is, if the walled cities could also read on the 14th, but it doesn't make sense to mention them on the 15th. Because if they just read on the 15th, then that's something unique to the 15th. And since it's unique to the 15th, it comes in the list of items that happened on the 15th. On the other hand, if it can be read on the 14th as well, then it doesn't make sense to mention it on the 15th, because it could also happen on the 14th. Or either mention both the 14th and the 15th, or don't mention it at all. So that's the question of the Gemara over here, which is, if Hakol Yotzim Barbasar, then why is it mentioning the 15th in the Mishnah? So the Gemara's answer is, Do ba lelamedcha ela ha-mitzvot ha-no'ogot ba'adar sheni. Ein no'ogot ba'adar rishon. Now, the no'ogot ba'adar sheni and not adar rishon, that part of the girsa is very difficult, and the more likely girsa should be, Lo ba lelamedcha ela mitzvot ha-no'ogot bo. Only comes to describe to the mitzvot that are done in it. In it, meaning that the point of the Mishnah is only to tell you mitzvot that are done on the 15th. It's not coming here to describe to you the whole month of Adar and all the mitzvot that take place, right? It just says, I'm on the 15th, I'll just tell you what can be done on the 15th. It's not trying to give you a comprehensive list of all the mitzvot, and not even within the mitzvah. It's not trying to give you a comprehensive understanding of the mitzvah. It's just talking about things that can be done on the 15th. And so because of that, we don't worry about the fact that it can also be done on the 14th. And now we have a story that relates to this, which is the Rabbi Yosi, V'Rabbi Acha. These are fourth generation of Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael. Havun Yatvin, they were sitting together. I'm Rabbi Yosi, the Rabbi Acha. So Rabbi Yosi with the Yud. Here it's with the Hey. Rabbi Acha, lo mistavra l'sheavar alalavo lo. So over here, he says, he gives an explanation for it. And here the Yerushalmi uses Lashon that you would have otherwise find in the Bavli in a different way, which is in the Bavli, we have a term called Bidiavad, and we have a term that's called the Chatchila. Bidiavad is when you've already done it. If you've done something already and you want to know what the Lachic ruling is, then that's called Bidiavad, when you've done it already. Here in the Yerushalmi, they call it Lisha Avar, in the past. When you do the Chatchila means when you're going to begin. If you ask us the Lacha before you start, and you're going to do something in the future, that's the Chatchila. And that's what the Yerushalmi calls Lavo, in the future. And so that's what the statement of Rabbi Yossi to Rabbi Acha is. Lo mistavra, that this din that everybody can read on the 14th, isn't that le'ashavar? That's only bidiavad. If you already read it on the 14th, then the 15th, you don't have to read it on it. Ayla, lavo, if you're asking us l'chatchila when you should read it, lo, we don't tell you to read on the 14th, we tell you to read on the 15th. And that would be an answer as to why the missionary includes the 15th for the walled cities, because that's the primary and the proper day to read it. Yes, if they read on the 14th, they'd be yotze, but that's bidi avad, that's l'shev avar. But when talking about l'chatchila or lavo, then the 15th would be the relevant day, and that's why the missionary included the 15th and not the 14th. And now we have a question. Baha Tani, don't we have a Tanaic work that says, Makom Shenagu Degrota Shnei Yamim, in places where they read it both days, Karim Otah Shnei Yamim, they read it 2 days. Now, there's two ways to read this Braita. One way to read the Braita is we're talking about a Safek. A place that has a Safek as to whether it's the 14th or the 15th, then you read it on both days, both the 14th and the 15th. The other way to read this is that Makom Shenagu Degrota Shnei Yamim, in places where they can read it 2 days, means in a walled city. Then, Karim Otash Neyamim, you can read it both days. Now, the problem, or the question that's being asked here, if you say it's talking about a Safek, a case of Safek where we don't know which day it is, well then, if they're reading the Megillah, I mean Safek, on the 14th, why are they bothering to read it on the 15th again? Because Bidiavad, they're already Yotze on the 14th. And if you read it the other way around, where they have the option to read it on the 14th or the 15th, then question is on Rabbi Yossi's statement here, which is that how could you say that it's bidiyavad if we're giving you the option to read on the 14th and the 15th? It sounds like those are equal options to read on the 14th or the 15th. So either the question of the Gemara is on Rabbi Yossi's statement that it is bidiyavad, or the question is more generally on this whole idea here that 14th is Zman Kriyat HaKol, because over here we have a case where it's a Safek and you're reading both days, and we don't say, okay, the 14th's done, why should I read on the 15th as well? So Amalei. So after this interjection of that question by the Gemara, we have Rabbi Acha saying to Rabbi Yossi, Oh, Ana Savar Kein, I also hold that way. I also think you're right that the 14th is only Bidiyavad, and the 15th is Lichat Chila. Amar Rabbi Mano V'yeut. What they're saying makes sense, because Ilam Yishakari V'yudalit Chuzer V'kariya B'tedvav. When they read it on the 14th, we go back and read it on the 15th. Shema Ein Shomim Lo. Maybe we don't listen to him and say that you can't do that. Imata Merkein Nibzeita. Okay, Zman Krachim Biyadecha. What you're gonna end up doing is eliminating the Zman of the Krachim or the 15th entirely. So the necessity to read it on the 15th when you read it on the 14th is because we want to preserve the takana of the Krachim. And if you came to us, we would tell you to read on the 15th and not on the 14th. So that supports both this idea that number one, the 14th is only bidiavad or l'she'avar for the walled cities. And number two is in places where they read it for both days, the reason we make you read it the second day is not because you weren't necessarily yotze on the first day, but because we want to maintain or preserve the structure that the walled cities read on the 15th. Otherwise, if people just read on the 14th and never read on the 15th, they won't preserve that takana of the 15th. Okay, Tani, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer. Mitzvot hanogot v'adar sheni, inoagot rishon. Chutz mehaseped v'tanit shehen shavin b'zeh b'zeh. The mitzvot that apply to Adar Sheni do not apply to Adar Rishon. That means that Mikra Megillah and all things that surround it about Purim are done on the second Adar, not on the first Adar. Except, the exception that ruled is Haseped Vatanit. Those things that are Asur on the days of Purim, Hesped and Tanit, also apply to Adar Rishon, which is when we have Purim Katan, and Purim Katan, and Shushan Purim Katan. On those days, there's an Isur Hesped and Tanit as well, because those are equal in both cases. Rabbi Abo, which is Rabbi Ba now in the Yerushalmi, in the name of Rav Irmia, it shouldn't be Ravi because he's not in Eretz Yisrael, he's in Bavel. So it's Rabbi Abba, who's a third generation Amor in Eretz Yisrael. I was quoting Rav Irmia, who's a second generation in Bavel. B'shem Rav, who's a first generation Amora in Bavel. And also we have this in the name of Rabbi Simon, which we know before was Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, who's a third generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. In the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. In the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is a first generation Amor in Eretz Yisrael. Alocha ke Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The Alocha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Ravuna Rabba, the one with the hay, did Tziporin. That was from Tziporin. Amar Hinhig. Rabbi Chanina Barchama in Tziporin. Kehado de Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He was Manhig, the people of Tziporin, like Rabbi Chanina Barchama. So now, Ravuna Rabba, who is a third generation Amora in Bavel, says about Tzipori that Rabbi Chanina Barchama was Manhig the Am there to practice like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So now the Gemara says, Lo Amar Elohim Hig. Over there it says that he only had them practice it that way. But he was not koveil alocho like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And that's against the position that we saw before, that alocho is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So over here we have the set of Amoraim that say the alocho is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And now we have Rav Huna saying that the practice of Rabbi Hanina Baruch Amu was hinhig. Adam Rabbi Shimon Gamliel we've seen before in the Bavli. And Tosafot discuss and Rashi discuss the difference between the alocho is like someone or in hinhig or hananga is like someone. Has to do with that. Are you allowed to practice against that? If you come, do we darshan in public that halocha? If it's alocho, we darshan in public the alocha is this way and you cannot go against it. That when it comes to minhag, we say that we paskin alocha if you come to us privately and ask. We won't do it in public. And we might stop people from doing it if they do it wrong. On the other hand, there's something called hanagua am. That the am was noheg to act this way. It doesn't have any halachic stamp of approval, but that's the minhag am. And therefore, we're not going to paskin alocha that way. We're not going to give a public drasha that way. And we're also not going to stop you if you do something different because that's the minhag am. So fine, that will let it stand because we don't have any problem with it. But we're not going to bring any normative halachic process to that principle. So over here, that would be the difference between alocha and hinhigadam. Hinhigadam sounds like over there, that's minhag, which is a ruye, morian, but not in public. It's not alocha versus alocha, which would be something we did even in public. Aval inyan shtarot, when it comes to shtarot, kotvim adar rishon, v'adar sheni. Now what we have here is adar sheni, dar stam, which is probably not the right gear, so the proper gear here probably is here, it's kotvim adar rishon, v'adar sheni adar, on both of them you write adar, el shekotvim adar sheni tinyan. But when it comes to adar sheni, you write the second adar. So what the statement here is that with regards to shtarot, when it comes to adar rishon, we just write adar. When it comes to adar sheni, we write adar sheni or adar tinyan. So that's the way that you differentiate between the two Adars. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, which is a Stam Rabbi Yehuda Tano in the Bavli. Omer, Adar, again, Rishon is probably not the right gear, so here it should be Adar Hasheni, Kodvin Tav Vidayo. You write Tav and it's enough. So on Adar Rishon, you write just Adar. And Adar Sheni, you write Adar Tav with a little Kanech on the top there. And that's the equivalent of Tinyan Sheni, or Adar Bet, the way we would do it today. In Hebrew, would be Adar Aleph would just be plain Adar. And Adar Bet would be Adar Sheni. You only have to make a single letter notating that it's Adar Sheni. And this has to do with a broader machloket as to which one is the Stam Adar. When you talk about Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni, which one is the default Adar? And which one is the additional Adar? So over here you see that the Gemara is favoring the opinion based on this Tosefta that both of them agree that Adar Rishon gets the shame just plain Adar. And Adar Sheni has to be notated as Adar Sheni. It's just a question of how you notate it. Do you have to write Adar Tinyan, Adar Sheni? Or can you simply write Adar Taf or Adar Bet, which is enough to notate it as being the second Adar. But with regards to Shtarot, it seems clear that Adar Rishon is the Stam Adar. When you write Adar, it's either one Adar in that year, or it's Adar Rishon. And if you want to note that it's Adar Sheni, then you have to actually literally write the Adar Sheni or some sort of notation that makes it clear that this is not the regular Adar. And that has to do, again, we'll get to a broader machloket about where it is the default status. Where do the mitzvot fall? What's the default of Adar? Is Adar Rishon the real Adar? And Adar Sheni is the quasi-Adar? It's the other way around. Adar Sheni is the real Adar. And Adar Rishon is the one that we view as being the extra Adar. Okay, we'll stop over here.